Chapter 7. The motel room was unchanged from how Kyle and Keegan had left it the previous night. There were still clothes spilling out of the little suitcase, still the collage of newspaper clippings tacked to the wall. Even Keegan's blood-soaked t-shirt was still sitting in the sink, and it had been there for long enough that there was a faint metallic tang in the air.
I should tidy this up before the cleaning lady comes,
Kyla said, and began stuffing clothes into the suitcase. Some part of me wanted to jump in and stop her, to fold the clothes neatly so they wouldn't get all wrinkled. I'd been reprimanded more than once in the army for letting my uniform get disheveled, but I did my best to push the old urges away. Meanwhile, Carmen and Asami had turned their focus to the collage.
Do you want us to throw this stuff away?
My sister asked Kyla.
No, just pack it up. Whoever gets assigned the job next might need some help, and Keegan and I made a pretty decent amount of headway.
Of course you did. You guys are probably the best-trained eyes in the Order. I said, because it was probably true. If they'd been raised in the Sanctuary, they surely had at least a decade of training over every other eye their age. Kyla blushed. I liked making her blush. Her fair skin made it stand out so prominently. It was cute. My eyes then came to rest on Keegan's shirt in the sink. For many reasons, it was probably a bad idea to leave it there. For one thing, anyone who found a bloody shirt in the bathroom, or even in the garbage, may decide to call the police. For another, if anyone thought to test the blood, it'd lead to a whole host of problems once it came out how that blood was not human. Well, not entirely, anyway. I picked up the shirt and balled it up. The blood had long since dried, thank God, because I wasn't interested in staining my jacket sleeve even more. I could dispose of it when we got back to the apartment. Hell, maybe it'd be safer to just burn it. Once everything had been tidied up, Kyla went to the front office and actually paid for a few more days, just in case we needed to come back. And Carmen and I led her and Asami to our apartment. It was still filled with boxes of my stuff I hadn't had the chance to unpack yet, and it hadn't been a big apartment to begin with, valet real estate being what it was, so it was a pretty tight squeeze. Between packing away the Campbell's investigation and walking to the apartment, it was about 9 p.m. by the time we arrived. But after having spent most of the day goofing off in Denver, I wasn't tired. We can go to sleep and get an early start, or we can make a start now, I told Asami and Kyla. They were both standing by the couch in the center of the lounge/kitchen, caged in by boxes, and Carmen had squeezed past them into the kitchen area and was inspecting the fridge for anything that had gone bad since we'd been gone. You two can take my room. I'll sleep on the couch. We'd agreed it would be safer for everyone, both Carmen and me, the inexperienced newbies, and Kyla and Asami, the eyes, who were technically going rogue, if we all stayed in the same place. It would limit our chances of being discovered.
Oh, we're not kicking you out of your own bed,
Kyla said, and her eyes went wide.
Asami can take the couch, and I'll sleep on the floor.
Absolutely not. I have a double bed. It's plenty big enough for you two. Unless you're uncomfortable sleeping in the same bed. I actually hadn't considered that. Carmen and her friends had always been so blasé about sharing a bed with each other. I'd kind of assumed all girls were like that.
It's not that,
Asami said with a frown.
It's just not fair. This is your home. One of you could sleep in my bed, and the other one could sleep with Leo,
Carmen suggested, as she propped her head up on her elbow and leaned on the kitchen counter. The look she gave me made it clear her phrasing had not been accidental, and I scowled at her. Ignore her? I'm not forcing you to share a bed with a guy you've only known one day, I said as I turned back to Kyla and Asami. Look, I really don't mind. After a year in the army, even the couch is going to be better than my bunk. Please, take my room.
I've learned that with these things, it's best just to go along,
Carmen told the other two women sagely.
He's kind of a hard ass about this kind of stuff.
Kyla looked like she wanted to protest, but for whatever reason she didn't, and instead bobbed her head in a combination of a nod and a bow, which sent her blonde curls bouncing.
Thank you, Leo.
Don't mention it, I said, and an easy grin spread across my face. You two both need some proper rest, and it's the least I can do. You went rogue for us.
Rogue,
Asami echoed, and something sparkled in her dark eyes.
I like the sound of that. Sounds determined. It does. But as for our sleeping arrangements, I'm not actually very tired now. I wouldn't mind getting a start on things. Good idea. I'll make tea.
She did, and Kyla, Asami, and I piled the boxes as best we could into the corner. Asami had brought the sanctuary's file on the missing half-fairy's case in her satchel, and cited how no one would go looking for it because, of course, they wouldn't.
The sanctuary has to keep a record of every case brought to their attention, but unless there's situations that risk exposing the magical world, such as something killing non-seers, the records usually just get left to collect dust.
She explained as she laid out the file on the coffee table. It was depressingly slim. Aside from a cursory description of the three missing Fae, there was practically nothing, not even a last known location. I glanced at the details of the missing half-Fae that were written on the page. Lyndon Aralia, Seely, 49. Dark skin, black hair, tall, golden-eyed. Last seen April 9th. Daphne Lantana, Seely, 67. Fair skin, red hair, average height, silver-eyed. Last seen April 20th. Jameson Hawthorne, Seely, 32, brown skin, white hair, average height, blue-eyed. Last seen May 1st.
That's it?
Carmen asked as she frowned, and she picked up one of the pages, but then let it simply float back down onto the coffee table.
That's seriously it?
A 67-year-old woman went missing? I asked, and mostly ignored my sister. And no one's concerned?
A 67-year-old half-fae is a little different. Full-blooded fairies are much more long-lived than humans. They live to be about 300 easily, so a half-fae of 67 would probably only look about 40 to a human. Magical Botox,
Carmen said, and grinned at Kyla.
So, how old are you? 24. Half-fae age and mature at the same rate as humans. We just sit in our physiological prime for a little longer, and signs of aging appear more slowly. I've read it has something to do with higher resistance to chromosomal fraying and telomere shortening. But I'm not a biologist, so I don't know the details.
I opened my mouth to say that, well, considering the jargon she'd just used, Asami was much closer to a biologist than I was. But I decided against it. We're getting off track, so... All right, the three missing Fae are all... Seely, what does that mean?
The courts of Fae are split into two groups. The Seely are those who are more benevolent to humans. The Unseely are the more malicious Fae. But the fact they're all Seely-blooded isn't unusual. Very few Unseely would choose to live in the human world, and most would sooner hunt a human for sport than have a child with him. I feel like benevolent is being graded on a curve, then?
Carmen said, and Kyla nodded.
The Seely are still dangerous. They're just less likely to torture and kill humans on principle, but they still may try to trap you if they think you're pretty or if you offend them.
So, their court alliance doesn't actually tell us anything. Great. I guess we'll have to tackle this the old-fashioned way, then. Asami and Kyla both peered at me, and Carmen facepalmed.
What's the old-fashioned way? It's where he lives out his childhood dream of being Sherlock fucking Holmes.
It's where we talk to people until we find a lead. I corrected as I once again ignored my sister. We have nothing to go on, monkey. We'll have to ask around at local supernatural hotspots until we find someone who can tell us something.
These people went missing, Leo.
Carmen huffed and pointed at me.
Someone could be gunning for anyone who comes looking. We can't just waltz around asking questions.
I'm not saying we go around loudly saying, hey, has anyone seen these missing fairies? But we have to get a sense of what happened. I looked at the file. Jameson is the one who went missing most recently. People are most likely to have recollections of what he was up to. We just have to say we haven't seen him in a while. Hell, Kyla's a half-fae. Do you guys have, like, a community? Kyla thought for a moment, and one hand came up to twist a blonde curl around her finger again.
I'm not especially close to any of the Los Angeles ones, but, yes, we try to keep in touch, watch out for one another. If I'm the one asking questions, people will find it less suspicious. But if the people who kidnapped Jameson and the others are around, I'd also be drawing targets on our backs.
Targets are fine. If someone tries to grab you, that just gives us a lead to follow.
Also, we're not just gonna abandon you to save our own skins. That would be seriously uncool.
Now that we had sort of a plan, Asami and Kyla took us to the nearest supernatural haunt they could think of. which I actually ended up finding as we walked, because I could see how the silvery threads of aura congregated in the streets like telephone wires. They all terminated at a somewhat dingy-looking building near the water. But when I visualized peeling off old wallpaper again, I saw its true appearance. It looked like a bar, similar to the one Carmen and I had been drinking in only the previous night. But now I could feel the latent magic in the air, and it fizzed against my skin. I felt electric, buzzed, even though I was completely sober.
You should pace yourselves,
Kyla said to Carmen and me.
There are a lot more people in there than in the bar we went to this afternoon. That much magic in the air can be overwhelming. I can feel it,
Carmen murmured, and I remembered what we'd discussed earlier today, about her possibly being more sensitive to magic, like she had radar for it or something. Well, maybe with practice she'd be able to identify and distinguish between people by the feel of their magic, the way I was starting to with the appearance of their auras. For now, though, I just didn't want her thrown into the deep end before I was confident she could keep herself afloat. Hey, easy there. I can see a lot of auras. This might get a little intense.
There are people missing, and there are other people being assholes to you, me, and Kyla,
my sister said, and she set her jaw in determination.
I can handle a little intensity.
I knew there was no point in arguing, so we stepped inside. The bar was far more crowded than the one we'd been to in Denver, and I wondered if perhaps Los Angeles just had a higher concentration of magical people. It was known for being kind of a wacko place, so maybe the eccentricities of non-humans and part-humans would go more easily unnoticed. Once again, like the bar in Denver, there were blood types on tap as well as beer and cider, and the guy behind the bar had a certain pointiness to his frame and a certain glossiness to his skin that made me suspect he wasn't as human as he appeared at first glance. He looked me up and down when I approached the bar. "I don't recognize you," he said as I came to a stop before him. "I just moved back here," I told him, which wasn't actually a lie. The man smiled at me and flashed a hint of overly pointed canines. Up close, I now realized his eyes weren't just dark. There was something to them that wasn't quite right. They were luminous, almost glowing, but they were still such a dark brown as to seem black, like they were boring into my soul. Then I blinked, and the spell broke. I blinked a few more times as I tried to clear my head of that strange mental fog. Then I scowled up at the man, because even if I didn't fully understand what had just happened, I knew it was his fault. "I don't trust newcomers," the man said as he laid his hands on the counter and cocked his head. "But you were telling the truth. So what do you want?" "Four half pints," I said, since I figured we would all be better off if we kept our wits about us. But I also knew if we weren't drinking at all, that would attract unwanted attention. The obviously vampire bartender pulled four half pints, and I paid before I waved over Carmen to help me carry him. Asami and Kyla had sequestered themselves at a table in the corner. It was a tall, skinny thing I found easier to lean on when I was standing, rather than perched on one of the bar stools. "So," I said as I took a sip of my drink. It wasn't bad, but there was definitely a sort of metallic taste that made me a little concerned. "Anyone here look like they might have some useful information?" Kyla had taken her own beer, but she didn't seem interested in actually drinking it. She cast her gaze around the room for several long moments before her green eyes once again came to rest on me.
"Most of the people here are werewolves, a couple vampires, some seers, and I think the trio in the back corner are phoenixes." "Phoenixes? Firebirds. I know what they are,"
my sister replied, and she sounded a little defensive.
I just didn't think they'd look like humans. Not always, but sometimes. Dragons, too, though you find them mostly in Europe or Eastern Asia, depending on if they're fire or water dragons.
Are phoenix likely to know anything about missing half-fae?
Truthfully, different magical species don't interact a huge amount,
Kyla answered as she drummed her fingers on the table.
It's only recently, with the rise of the internet and globalization, you know, travel being easier, that sort of thing, that magical communities have begun to overlap. 100 years ago, you might find a nest of vampires living somewhere, but they wouldn't be living anywhere near werewolves or sirens. Are you just going to keep offhandedly mentioning creatures that are real and not expect us to freak out a little? It would be better for our cover if you could wait until you got home to freak out.
Carmen stuck out her tongue childishly, but she smiled too, and then turned to me.
How do you want us to tackle this?
Why are you asking me?
Well, you're the military one with all the strategy training.
My sister answered with a shrug.
Divide and conquer and all of that?
There's no dividing or conquering here. We're gathering information. We gotta be discreet and keep an eye on each other. Especially Kyla. After a brief discussion, it was agreed I would stay at the table so I could keep an eye on all three of them and the situation in general. I'd had a lot of practice in continuously scanning an environment for threats, but as time went by, it seemed no one was interested in Kyla, or at least not in kidnapping her. It also seemed we were coming up empty, because whenever Carmen, Kyla, or Asami came to chat for a minute, they never had any information of use. Carmen claimed that her collecting the phone numbers of seemingly everyone in the bar was for information purposes, but seeing as we'd grown up together, it was impossible for us to convincingly lie to one another. Are you just flirting, or are you actually getting information to use? I asked after she'd pointed out a tall, blonde werewolf who, in my opinion, looked like way too much of a douchebag to be worth her time.
I am, actually. He said if we were looking for someone, we should speak to Ralph Chander.
Who? I asked and frowned down at my beer. The metallic taste was definitely not imagined, and I set it aside on the table.
Apparently, he's a werewolf, and he knows everyone in the area. He's, like, super popular or something, I don't know, but if we want to find someone, he's our best bet.
Is he here?
Nope. But I did get an address.
And you're sure this isn't some trap? I asked and raised an eyebrow, but Carmen grinned at me.
I am, actually. I tried the, like, vibe thing. All good. I think Philin genuinely wanted to help.
I was a little skeptical, since Carmen understood this all about as much as I did. But I trusted her and her gut, so I waved Asami over. She'd been chatting to a vampire who leaned over her like he'd wanted to box her in, but she was able to easily extract herself. Well, maybe I had some latent prejudices about vampires. I didn't actually know anything about him yet, but several centuries worth of books and myths were bound to make an impact on anyone's image. Well, apparently if we want to know where someone is, we should go to Ralph Chander, I said to Asami. Have you heard of him?
Sorry, no.
Asami said and shook her head.
But I'm a researcher. I didn't have as much cause to travel to other supernatural hotspots. Maybe Kyla knows something?
Do you see her? I asked as I looked around the room again. A bubble of panic threatened to rise in my chest before I spied a shock of blonde hair off in the corner. Yep, never mind, I got her.
Oh, thank God. You had me worried there for a sec.
You two stay here. I'll get her. I wove my way through the bar, past patrons that eyed me suspiciously and others that just eyed me, and one particularly tall gentleman who I assumed was a vampire, judging by the viscous red liquid in his glass. Kyla was standing at the far end of the room, in front of what I eventually realized was a bulletin board, like the one in the bar in Denver. Hey, Kyla, I said, and gently reached out to touch her shoulder. She jumped slightly when I did, but she didn't turn to look at me. Hey, you okay? She just silently pointed to one of the flyers on the bulletin board. Man and woman found dead in home. No signs of forced entry. Hearts missing. Reward 15,000.
That's the job Keegan and I were on,
she said, and her voice sounded strained, tearful, but trying not to be.
They've already put up a flyer for it. They've already written us off as not being able to solve it, and it wasn't even a job they really cared about. They told me it was reassigned, but they just stuck it here instead of giving it to another IR or letting us come back to it once Keegan's better.
Dicks, I muttered. Then I tapped Kyla's shoulder again. And this time she'd turned to me. Hey, fuck 'em. They're idiots for not recognizing your potential. You and Keegan, you're better off without 'em. We're gonna get this job done, and you two are gonna make the order look like amateurs. They'll be begging for you to come back. They'll offer up all the best jobs, and you'll be able to tell 'em to go fuck themselves. Kyla had gone very pink. I supposed I must have gone a little red, too, because my speech had been a lot more impassioned than I'd really intended for it to be. But that didn't mean I hadn't meant it. I had. Every word.
You really are a remarkable man, Leo.
Kyla said carefully, and she gave me a shy smile.
Carmen's lucky to have someone like you for her brother.
Oh, she's not, actually, I said with a grin. I'm a total asshole to her. But I'm sure Keegan would be telling you the same stuff if he was here right now. Both of you, you're way better than the Order deserves. You genuinely want to help people, and they're not letting you because of some stuffy, prejudiced dickbags. I squeezed her shoulder encouragingly, and one of her hands came up to cover mine. I was momentarily fascinated by the sight of her hand on mine. She was so much paler than me, her hands so much smaller, but those long, slender fingers were still marked by tiny white scars crisscrossing over her knuckles. Even my hands didn't have that many scars, and I'd spent several years in the army. I'd had my share of scrapes and injuries both in childhood and while I'd served, but whatever training Kyla had done to become an eye would have surely made that look like child's play. And then there was the matter of her actually touching me, skin on skin. The moment she did, it was like her aura became amplified. The wispy silver lines curled around her ankles got brighter, so bright I couldn't help but stare down at them. In doing so, I pulled my hand away from hers, and as soon as we broke contact, her aura went back to normal. Huh. Weird. Your aura, it got brighter when you touched me. Kyla frowned down at her shoes and squinted, like she was trying to force her brain to see something that most of the time it blotted out. Then she cocked her head and looked up at me.
I don't think it did,
she said, and reached for my hand again.
I can't see my own, but yours is... I think you made my aura stronger.
Stronger? I echoed, and I tried not to feel like a teenager with his first sweetheart, but something about the way she took my hand made my face heat up. I mean, it was brighter, but...
Auras are a representation of power. If you have a particularly bright aura, it usually means you have a lot of magical power. Mine's a little brighter than a normal seer's. Asami's is apparently more silvery, but mine is closer to white.
Now that she mentioned it, and I looked over at Carmen and Asami to make sure, Kyla was right. Asami's aura was still glowing, still silver, but it was less luminous than Kyla's. Huh. Weird. Is that normal?
It's probably related to your magical affinity. If you can amplify auras, it would make tracking them easier, and you might be able to increase others' abilities to an extent. I don't know what it would do to your own, though.
I guess I'll have to practice and find out, I said, while still staring at the way the lines floated through the air and curled around her feet like smoke. We watched it for a long minute, and then Kyla turned her gaze up to look at me.
What did you come over for? Was it just to see if I was okay?
Well, that too. But also Carmen got something she reckons might be useful. A guy called Ralph Chander. Apparently he kind of knows everyone around here. Some werewolf said if she was looking for someone, this Ralph guy's the best place to start with.
Are we sure that's trustworthy information?
Kyla asked, and she raised a doubtful eyebrow. God, she even looked cute when she frowned. I mentally shook myself. Focus. I needed to focus. The last thing she needed was some guy she'd just met drooling over her, even if she wasn't in emotional turmoil over her injured brother and her asshole superiors. Carmen said she didn't feel any bad mojo off the address he gave her, so I think we're all right. Of course, we'll still need to be careful.
Wait.
Kyla interrupted me as she dropped my hand to raise both of her own, and I didn't fully realize she'd still been holding my hand until after she let it go.
Carmen, what?
Yesterday when we were bumming around Denver, she said she could, sense dangerous stuff or something, or magic, I don't know. She was looking at the flyer and, got a sense that something was bad. She could probably explain it better. Kyla's green eyes had gone wide and round. I could see why she and Asami were friends, because they had the same expression of fascination whenever Carmen or I did something unusual. I might have been offended if not for how there was no judgment in their gazes. They just seemed so genuinely interested. It was honestly a little flattering.
Magic isn't a very precise thing. It's a force of nature, so magical affinities can be, just about anything, but still some kind of forewarning or intuition. That's probably a very complex skill. I wonder if you and Carmen, because you were pushing down your abilities for so long, if they didn't get stronger.
What, like they fermented? I said, and then cringed. That was probably not the best choice of words, but Kyla giggled.
I guess you could think of it like that, but still, that's really strange. I wonder what your magic will manifest as.
You and me both, I said with a sheepish laugh. I was kind of eager to figure it out, but at least I had an idea now. I could apparently boost others. Cool. We walked back to Carmen and Asami, and the four of us headed back to the apartment. It was about midnight by now, but apparently that didn't mean it was time to sleep, because Carmen pulled up the address on her Maps app, and it turned out to be a gym.
Alpha Fitness.
She read off her phone screen.
Release your inner wolf. God, that sounds like a creepy cologne ad. No, thank you.
Could you just give us directions? I groaned and rolled my eyes. That guy said it was open all night, right?
8 p.m. to 8 a.m.
Carmen said with a nod.
Designed to... Hang on. Here we go. Not everyone has free time during the day. Howl at the moon. Jesus Christ, who writes this crap? And don't be a sheep. It's about a 15-minute walk from here. Want to go now?
Well, we might as well, if it's open. We can't go during the day, and I still don't feel tired.
There's a pretty big need in the supernatural community for businesses like his,
Asami said. She was curled up on the couch with her satchel in her lap, and as she pulled book after book from it, I became increasingly convinced it was bigger on the inside. Even full, the satchel couldn't have held as many books as were now piled on the coffee table.
Since many magicals either have to hide what they're truly capable of, or can't use a gym during normal daylight hours, it's no wonder he's popular and well-known.
Well, hopefully you'll know something useful then, I said, and grabbed my jacket. You guys stay here. No sense in all of us going. And we still need to figure out why someone is specifically targeting Half-Fae, but not killing them.
I'll come with you,
Kyla said suddenly, and she quickly stood up. I realized a moment later that maybe she didn't want to read about why people would want to hunt down people like her. Sure, I said with a smile. I could probably use some backup anyway. I still didn't know the first thing about the magical world, and I needed this Ralph guy to like me. Or at least I needed him to be willing to give me information. Kyla grabbed her own jacket, and with a wave to Carmen and Asami, we headed down to Alpha Fitness Gym. But not before Carmen shot me a smug look that I very pointedly ignored. Alpha Fitness looked like a normal gym from the outside, which was almost the weirder option by this point. I'd come to expect all magically glamored buildings to have decrepit illusions, but this looked fine. In fact, it looked completely the same when I tried to peel off the metaphorical wallpaper.
Some glamour charms just shift perception rather than warping it. They're easier to cast because it's more about redirecting someone's gaze than outright fooling it.
Oh, good to know, I said, and we walked up to the front door. The lights inside were all on and spilling out of the mostly glass windows. It looked glossy and professional for all the world, like an entirely normal gym, except for how there were some very distinctly non-human traits on some of the people I could see inside. One dude running on a treadmill had horns. A woman on the weight bench had bright blue skin. Do you think I would be able to cast illusion charms? I then asked. Like, I know you said anyone can in theory master anything, but you know, they have more talent for certain stuff, but would this boost thing lend well to glamours?
I don't know, but I can't imagine it would make too much difference.
Kyla answered with a thoughtful expression.
Glamour magic is a common affinity and relatively easy to grasp.
We stopped talking when we entered the gym. A man with all black eyes sat behind a receptionist's desk and gave a smile that was all pointed teeth. Not just his canines, but all of them. His name tag said Alistair.
Hello there. Do you have membership cards?
Oh, we're not here for a workout right now,
Kyla replied just as brightly.
We were actually hoping to talk to Mr. Chander about something. A friend of ours has... Well, we haven't seen him in a while, and we thought Mr. Chander might know something about where he went.
Oh, he does know a lot of people, doesn't he?
Alistair propped his chin up in one hand and gave another dazzling, toothy smile, and his voice was honeyed. Too honeyed, actually. I felt like it was creeping over my thoughts, slowing my brain down.
I hope you're not trying to use intention magic to make me and my friend forget why we're here.
Kyla said lightly as she cocked her head.
We really just need to talk to Mr. Chander.
You're too sharp for your own good, pretty thing.
He said, but not like he was actually annoyed, then pressed a button on his desk.
Sir, I have a handsome couple here who would like to talk to you about a friend of theirs.
No, we're not at... I started, but then Alistair turned his black eyes on me, and I fell silent.
Mr. Chander is on the lower level. He just finished up a kickboxing class.
Thank you, Alistair.
Kyla said, and then she wrapped her hands around my arm and pulled me toward a staircase leading down. The lower level of Alpha Fitness was like a boxing ring. The glossy sleekness of the upper levels was replaced by smooth concrete walls and floor, with the fluorescent lights set into the ceiling instead of hanging down on chains. It looked like two square rooms that had been mostly conjoined, except for the paint job. The end of the staircase, where we entered, was painted red and black to match the huge boxing ring in the center. The other end was painted blue and white, and a man was rolling up mats and stuffing them into a storage bin.
Ralph Chander?
I asked carefully, and he looked up. He was, I then realized, the largest man I'd ever seen. Definitely 6.5 feet tall, maybe even a little taller. He was corded with thick muscles, and not the sort seen on magazines and movie posters, with skin pulled taut over muscles and veins, a cut waist, and triangular torso without an ounce of fat or retained water. No, this was real strength, not for aesthetic, but power. His shoulders seemed to ripple with every movement, his muscles bunching and shifting under tawny skin. He was a little darker than me, though not by much, and his hair was jet black. His gray eyes were sharp, and he looked down at me like he knew he could probably kill me with one hand if he wanted to. And then he smiled.
"That's what they call me. Now how can I help you both?"
he asked politely. The smile seemed genuine, which was almost stranger, but I was relieved this Goliath wasn't planning on squishing me like a bug. Not for now, at least.
I'm Leo. This is Kyla. We're looking for Jameson Hawthorne. Someone said you might know where he
can't help you, kid.
What?
I said I can't help you.
Ralph repeated, more firmly this time, and he turned back to tidying up the mats.
I keep clear of all that politics, all that eye business. It's a damn shame Jamie went missing, but there ain't nothing I can do about it. And like hell the Order's gonna do anything about a missing half-fey. But that's the way it is. Best keep your head down. You make fewer enemies like that.
But he's missing. He could be hurt, he's probably scared too, and he's not the only one—
I know,
Ralph said, and his smile was less friendly this time.
But it's not my problem. I'm sorry, miss. Feel free to come back, though. We welcome all magical types here.
Excuse me? I frowned.
That's it?
Ralph turned back to face me, and he drew himself up to his full and considerable height.
You smell like fresh meat. I reckon you're pretty new to the magic scene in Los Angeles, kid. So I'll make it plain and simple. If you want to survive, you'd best stay out of things that don't concern you. Keep your head down, and you'll keep it on your shoulders a little longer.
I glared up at him. Maybe it was a suicide mission to keep testing this guy's patience, but I just couldn't believe he'd abandon a friend like that.
What would he think of you? Jameson? You called him Jamie, so you must be a friend of his, right? What would he think if he found out you knew something about what happened to him, and you were just leaving him to rot?
Ralph growled. Not in the way I would growl, but a real animal wolf growl. And were my eyes tricking me, or did his eyes become a little less gray and a little more gold?
You think you know anything about me? I know what it's like to have a friend in trouble. I know what it's like to feel helpless against much larger forces. But I also know if everyone was like you and decided it wasn't their problem, that someone else could handle it and take whatever hits might come, and we'd all be cold and alone, and the world would really be a fucking depressing place.
I took a step toward him. Not a threat exactly, but a challenge.
Your friend is missing. And if you don't know anything about it, then fine, we're sorry to bother you. But if you do know something and you don't tell us, then you sure as hell can't call yourself his friend anymore.
Ralph glared down at me, and I thought to myself, fine, bring it. Because I didn't care what he had to say if he was just going to cast aside someone he purported to care about. I'd never do that to Carmen, or even Kyla, or Asami, or Keegan. There was an agreement between the five of us now. We stuck together. We watched each other's backs.
You're a bold one, aren't you?
Ralph finally asked.
Someone has to be.
I replied, and Ralph's face twisted.
I braced myself for some kind of impact, a hit, or a kick, maybe even a bite.
Instead, he laughed, and I opened my eyes to stare at him.
Ha ha ha! You're probably too bold for your own good. But damn, fresh meat is feisty. I like it.
I blinked, and Ralph just kept on laughing. Then I glanced back at Kyla, and she just shrugged, as baffled as I was.
So you'll tell us what you know?
I asked as I turned back to Ralph.
Well, that depends.
What do you plan to give me in return?
Well, we don't exactly have money right now, but, we could pay you back once we do.
Our luck's set to change, and I'm a man of my word. I don't doubt it, kid, but I never put much stock in luck.
So I'll tell you what you want to know.
Kyla and I must have let this show on our faces because he then raised a hand.
I'll tell you. If you fight me. And if you win.